stands out to me in my own history is proof that you can do good for other people and you know, be pulling your own weight in the world without ever punching a clock. I mean, there's just so many different ways to reach out and listen to people and comfort people and see them through the hard times, you know?
Welcome to Thrive in the Future podcast, positive solutions to help you thrive. Homesteading, gardening, community, side hustles, and building skills. At Grow Nut Trees, I still have some elderberry cuttings, and I also have some hazelnut and red mulberry, as well as the usual comfrey crowns and comfrey cuttings. That's at grownuttrees.com. Do you use cardboard when creating a new garden bed? I don't. I use my trusty broad fork, I turn over the sod, I throw down some compost on top of that, and then I plant milpa, which is a seed mix with 40 seeds in it, with the base being corn, beans, and squash. And I grow that out. It grows soil, it grows food. It's a quick way to achieve food, not lawns. So check out my article on allgardenadvice.com. Okay, welcome back to Thrive in the Future. This week I have Andy Hickman back with me again. Welcome, Andy.
How's it going? Great to be here again.
Yeah, it's going real well. So has spring sprung up in the Adirondacks?
Yeah. Thinly, I'd say. I mean, we're in the phase where the days are good and warm, but the nights are still chilly. It was 33 last night, and now I'd estimate it's the mid-60s here.
No, good. That's pretty good. You were on last June, and I still watch You're Gonna Make It video every once in a while, so because that just lifts my spirits. You've had a lot of adventure since then, so what's new with you?
What's new with me? Well, I'm out of the military.
Mm-hmm.
So when I said I was going to make it, I made it out of the military at least. So that's pretty good. I'm growing a beard. My hair's getting longer, and I'm slowly becoming less regimented by the day. In fact, I didn't even know what day it was the other day, and I said, "Boy, that feels nice." So I'm enjoying that. And of course, you know, when I got out of the military, people said, "Well, what are you going to do?" And I said, "Well, I don't know, but I'm not doing this anymore." And then the day loomed, and I kind of stressed out a little, and then I just started writing a little more. And next thing you know, my expenses went down, and my writing income went up, and now I guess I can call myself a writer without smirking.
Yeah, your Substack is great.
Do you like it? Great. I'm glad you enjoy it.
Yeah, I really like the story you had the other day where you were hitchhiking and the guy who picked you up turned out he was going to go and commit suicide. I thought that was real deep stuff there.
Yeah, I keep that in mind anytime anybody calls me a lazy bum and good for nothing, should go get a job. It's kind of stands out to me in my own history as proof that you can do good for other people and you know, be pulling your own weight in the world without ever punching a clock. I mean, there's just so many different ways to reach out and listen to people and comfort people and see them through the hard times, you know?
Mm-hmm. You've got engaged and you're getting married here pretty soon?
Correct. Yeah. So June 1st, we're having the wedding. Everybody and their brother's coming from all over the country. We're about to do kind of a separation period. So the month of May, she's going to go with her family, and I'm going to travel the country on the Amtrak. And we're basically doing that so that we're really missing each other on the day of the wedding to make it that much more special.
Mm-hmm. Describe the ceremony. It's kind of interesting.
Well, yeah, so we're not getting married in a super conventional way because it's actually very complicated because her background and my background are very different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she got a lot of kind of, I guess you could call them Pentecostal, backwoods Christians from down in Arkansas, which is maybe the polar opposite of a bunch of stiff Yankee Catholics. So, you know, we will get married in the Catholic Church on our own accord down the road, but we couldn't have the main event be that way, or a lot of her family might not have come, or it just would have been strange. So we figured having a big party in the woods just sort of almost like the rainbow gathering hippie Christian, let's all get out in the woods and have a ceremony like that, you know? So we're pretty excited about it.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I like the bring your picnic lunch. That was pretty great.
Yeah. Well, right. And we also like, I mean, it's big for us to prove to everybody that you don't have to spend a bunch of money on everything you want to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reality is to us, as far as we're concerned, a marriage is a covenant between me, her, and God. And right. Everything else is just about mixing the families, getting them together, getting them so they know each other. And that's it, you know? So all this other stuff seems dubious. You know, you got people spending tens of thousands of dollars on a wedding, and we just can't abide that. I guess if we had the 10 grand, we'd rather buy land for our kids, you know?
Absolutely. Tell a little about your Amtrak adventure.
Oh, well, I was sort of thinking, because I've got the month of May to myself, I was just thinking about different trips I could do that would take about a month and would be worth doing, just to kind of help me get my mojo back, so to speak. I mean, it's been years since I was out traveling free.
Mm-hmm.
And at this stage in the game, I got to kind of ease back into it, you know, put some miles under me, do a little stealth camping, do a little hitchhiking, see a few people that I haven't gotten to see in a while, including my father, who I've never met before. Wow. We're planning to meet up out in Oregon. He's from the coast of Oregon, so I'm going to take the Coast Starlight train up to Eugene and hitchhike out to the coast and spend some time on the beach with my father. So pretty excited about doing that. I figured the Amtrak was the way to do it, just because people are interested in it too. If you talk about Amtrak online, people are really fascinated by it. And there's a certain romance about it. I think it's like, it may be one of the last great American institutions that has not been totally reconfigured. There's still something very romantic and very human about the train. Whereas, you know, you get on a plane and everybody's antisocial. They've been humiliated by TSA. You know, you're zipping around in the sky, which I'm not even sure human beings have any business doing anyway. Mm-hmm. And everybody's in a hurry and everything looks sleek and modern and fancy and bureaucratized. You get on a train, it's like, it's come as you are. They're not even going to check your ID or go through your bags or, you know, put their hands all over you. You just hop on the train and you start talking to some old grandma who is probably a Mennonite going to Indiana for her cousin's wedding, you know, or whatever. So I like that. I think there's something nice about that.
Wow. So you've got a whole month pass. Is that how that works?
Yeah, it's $500 and you've got 30 days and 10 segments. So that basically means that anytime you got to change trains, you're using another segment, right? So if I plan it out well, I'm going to be able to go to a bunch of different places. Right now, I'm looking at doing a stopover in Holdridge, Nebraska, where mm-hmm. a couple of people on Twitter have offered to show me around. So it's just a small Nebraska town. I'd like to learn about it and meet the folks there. I really love Nebraska. I think it's a great state that people just overlook because they think, I guess they drive on I-80 and they find the drive boring. And I agree, it's a boring drive. But when you get off the interstate, you meet some of the finest people you're going to meet in this country. So I'm going to do that. Going to stop out west to meet my father. And I'm thinking about going to Sanderson, Texas, which is out in the middle of nowhere, West Texas. And it is the least used Amtrak stop station in the country. So I got a contact out there at a ranch, so I might get to spend some time out in the desert in West Texas.
Wow, that's great. So do you sleep on the train just sitting up, or how's that work?
Yeah, pretty much. The cool thing is that a lot of the transcontinental routes, they're not always full. Mm-hmm. There are times of the year where they're full. I'm not sure that May is late enough into the sort of tourist season to fill up. I mean, I'll see. But a lot of times when the train is not totally full, you can go in the viewer car at nighttime and there's nobody there because there's nothing to see in the viewer car because it's dark, and you can lay flat. So I've gotten away with that many times. If you get a permissive crew on Amtrak, if it's flat and you're out of the way, you can get some sleep like that. And then, yeah, in instances where you can't do it, yeah, you sleep 2 or 3 hours sitting up in a chair, and then you get off somewhere, and hopefully you find a place to pitch a tent for a day or two, you know. So,
Wow, so when you get off, then you're going to do some stealth camping, or what are you going to do?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, you know, you can sleep just about anywhere. As long as you're up before sunrise, you're out of sight at night, and you pitch your tent later on in the night to where, you know, it's dark. And a lot of times I don't even pitch a tent. I'll just sleep in just about anywhere I fit, and nobody cares, and it's free and it's fine. You know, you just got to be careful. There's a whole art to it. I mean, I'm actually writing a book about it. Among other things, it's a major element of the book I'm writing. It's just sort of a how-to stealth camp, you know, for people who are into low budget travel, for the consideration of people who'd never do it. And also for homeless people themselves, because a lot of homeless people, they have no idea where to sleep, and they wind up in the downtown districts of big cities where there's a bunch of drugs and cops and crime. And, you know, there's a strategy to it, you know?
So when you're on the viewing car in the Amtrak, is it dark enough where you can see the sky? Like, can you see the stars and stuff?
Yeah, it depends on where you are, of course. But yeah, I've gotten some pretty good night sky viewing on those cars. Though some of them are, the windows are so scuffed up and dirty in some cases that you're not going to see too many stars. But you can see a lot.
Okay. Is the viewing windows over to the side, or are they up at the top? I haven't been on one of those cars.
Basically, if you were to crank your head up 45 degrees facing either direction the train's going, you would you'd get a view from the windows, but directly overhead there is a solid roof, you know. So, but no, it's actually pretty majestic, you know. You go out on the California Zephyr through the mountains, and you're not even on the big railroad there that's super straight, because there's parts of the country where the Transcon railroad is just totally straight. You're out on some windy, basically back road railroads that just snake through the mountains and the desert, and you can see all around. And usually the viewer car fills up, and there's a lot of tourists from overseas. So you'll sit there for a while and drink a cup of coffee, talk to a professor from Germany, talk to an Amish guy who's, you know, starting a farm somewhere, talk to a Japanese guy who doesn't speak English, and you're pantomiming with him, you know, all kinds of people. Old retirees like to do it. Some more scruffy derelict type people do it, but usually they take the Greyhound. So it's kind of an interesting setup. You really meet a diversity of people. A lot of times you just meet people who don't like to fly. And I guess I'd count myself in that category, because I really don't fly. So
yeah, me too. So if you get would you say Holstedge, Nebraska?
Holdridge, Nebraska. Yeah. Train comes in at 2:43 in the morning. And I got people there who said that they don't mind. They'd like to pick me up, and, you know, we'll hang out, and they'll put me up. Maybe I'd pitch a tent in their yard or something, or in a garage, and then, yeah, I'll wake up and probably spend a couple of days in Holdridge is the plan right now. But it's all pending the availability of trains, because you have to schedule all this stuff out, you know?
Yeah. How often does a train come through there going west?
Once a day.
Oh, okay. So it happens every day. That's not bad.
Yep. Most lines are daily. There's a few of them that are, three times a week, but most of them are daily. Yep.
Interesting. So tell a little bit more about your writing. It's really taken off, and your Substack is pretty popular now.
Yeah. I'm just shy of 5,000 followers on Substack, or 5,000 subscribers, I should say. And I'm climbing up to 180 paid subscribers, and got a lot of interest. A lot of people really support the work I'm doing, and I'm sort of billing it as I call the publication Hickman's Hinterlands. And I sort of the theory that is at the heart of my thinking with Hickman's Hinterlands is really that, you know, the age of the machine has ushered in dramatic changes to human anthropology. And these are changes that are totally unprecedented and have no comparison in any previous iteration of human society. And are also like these changes after the Industrial Revolution and the Digital Revolution, they're so substantial that they're even incongruent with our evolutionary psychology and biology, to where we're living in a world that we're not adapted to live in. And so I find that sort of at the center of the metropole, so to speak, you know, going to New York City or, you know, Los Angeles, and I'm sure I've never been, but maybe Tokyo and Paris and London and Shanghai and such. There's one thing that's going on, and it's at its most, it's at its fever pitch, you know, that machine world where, you know, everything is bureaucratized and alien to, you know, maybe a peasant farmer in the 19th century. One still finds outside of those areas, the further out of those areas you go, out into the hinterlands, out into these sort of isolated rural communities, they still find shreds of who we were before we built machines. And I'm fascinated by that. And so there's plenty of people, they love to travel to a city and write about it and photograph it. And I think that's great. There's a lot of people who do that really well. But I kind of want to start going to more obscure backwoods locations around the world and document, document them from a very specific anthropological perspective, you know?
Mm-hmm. Once you get married, what's your travel plans for the summer?
As of yet, we're talking about getting tickets on the Queen Mary 2 from New York City to Southampton, England on a 9-day ocean journey to avoid flying. I'm a little nervous because Keturah might get seasick. I might get seasick. I mean, it might be 9 days of throwing up and wishing we didn't do it. But I figure if my own ancestors could do it on a much more poorly equipped vessel, we can get through it. And we may even find that it's a thrill and that it's very beautiful. And then we're going to go around Europe basically indefinitely. I mean, we're going to travel through the Schengen states a good bit, and we may jut up to Scotland, and we have friends in Ireland, and we may even go to Eastern Europe. You know, I've wanted to check out Albania for some time. Just a lot of different little trips that I've sort of am interested in, and Keturah has friends throughout Europe, so we're going to do that. And then possibly, if after all that we're satisfied and we're ready to go back to the new world, we may try to spend the austral summer in South America, or barring that, maybe Mexico and the American Southwest. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So one of the things you talked about in your most recent, one of your most recent articles was being time rich, and that really stood out to me. So speak a little bit more about that.
What can I say? I can't praise it enough. If you have total ownership over your own free time, you're more or less what they call a masterless man, you know, because people would say, well, time is money. And you say, well, how do you get money? They say, well, you got to work for somebody usually to make money. Right. And you say, well, why do I have to work for somebody to get time, which is money, if I already have time, you know? So it's sort of a tautology, you know. And speaking of tautologies, I mean, when I was a kid, I was 15, everybody and their brother was saying, oh, well, when are you going to get a license? You're going to get a license? And I sort of thought about it. And then one day I heard this kid named David in my high school. He said this, he was 16. And he said, it was Friday. And he said, boy, I don't really want to go to work tomorrow. And I said, David, why are you working? You're 16 years old. You better enjoy it, because this might be the last time in your life where you don't actually have to work. And he said, well, I got to. I said, why? He said, well, if I don't work, I'm not going to get paid enough to pay for my truck. And I said, Dave, why do you own a truck? You don't need a truck. I mean, you could ride your bicycle like the rest of us do. And I'm telling you, he didn't miss a beat. He said, well, I got to have the truck because if I didn't have the truck, I wouldn't be able to get to work. And he wasn't being ironical. He was just like, he was going in circles in his head. And I was looking at this. I said, I'm not doing this. So I didn't get a license. I got a bicycle. I walked a lot. I mean, as a teenager in the summertime, I'd probably walk 15 miles in a day, just about every day, mm-hmm. you know, and I was biking about as much. And then, you know, years go on and I start hitchhiking, which I always thought was a good thing to do. I might even say it's a conservative thing to do in some way because you're conserving energy, right? I mean, there's an empty right. seat going where you're going and you put your thumb up and the driver voluntarily pulls over and gives you that seat. Well, he's not out any money. Nobody's out anything. And you get to have a social interaction. So to me, that's just all positives. So I got into hitchhiking and I never really looked back until I joined the military and was given direct orders by my chief to get a license and an automobile for logistical reasons. Mm-hmm. And I just sold my car 3 days ago. So
I'm getting in the upper 50s and starting to feel the burden that time's running out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the time is running out. I mean, and that's true whether you're 9 years old or 90. I mean, every minute goes by, you ain't going to get it back. So sure. The idea that I should, by default, adopt a disposition of taking my time, which I will never get back regardless of how I spend it, and sell it, is an inferior idea to the idea of figuring out how to just use my time for myself productively to meet my needs on my own terms. You know, if a man can do that, I contend that he should consider it, you know, and I don't judge anybody that likes working their 9 to 5. I mean, if that's what you like doing, that's fine. But it's an option that people don't think about or talk about so much, you know, is just sort of being a, I don't know, jack of all trades. You know, you pick up a little craft, a little skill. Maybe you write newspaper articles. Maybe you're a tinsmith. You know, maybe you own a well drilling truck. You have something, you know, and you just do that, you know.
Yeah, I just went down to the elementary school, picked up some chestnuts, putting them in a bucket, sprouted them out, and now I'm going to sell some trees tonight. So,
right.
Aside from a little bit of soil and the reused bucket, I don't have anything else in it. So, right. Yeah, good stuff.
Yep.
So tell a little bit about how folks can contact you and read your stuff on Substack.
Well, I'm at Hickman's Hinterlands on Substack, which you get to by putting in shagbark.substack.com. That shagbark is in like the shagbark hickory.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on Twitter at shagbark_hick.
Sounds good. Thanks, Andy.
All right. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, you take care.
Yep. Blessings on your wedding and also on your trip.
Yeah, and likewise. Yeah, I hope your chestnuts turn out.
Yeah, we'll see. Thank you.
Hey, if you like this episode, leave us a tip on Venmo or Cash App at Thriving the Future. Or join the Patreon, patreon.com/thrivingthefuture. You get early episodes and you get extras. Thank you. Check out Thriving News. That's where Perpin and I share longer form articles about homesteading, mindset, milpa gardening, food forest, etc. Go check it out at thrivingnews.com. Thank you for listening to Thriving the Future podcast. If you like what you hear, please click that like or subscribe button in your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Twitter @ThrivingTheFute. And also go to thriveinthefuture.com.